This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. You know, authors have tried lots of remedies for writer's block. I wonder how many have ever thought about going to an old textile mill or hopping a train. The new Piedmont laureate, Carrie Knowles, thinks that spaces like that promote creativity, and she plans to lead writing workshops in surprising settings around the area throughout the year. But these workshops are just part of her efforts to promote writing in the Piedmont. As a writer with expertise in short fiction, she's also going to help people think about the art of the short story. Carrie Knowles is a Raleigh-based author, and she is a writing coach and arts advocate, and she joins us today. Carrie, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
And congratulations as your appointment as a Piedmont laureate. That's wonderful.
It's quite an honor. It's really fun, actually.
Tell us what that is. What do you do as a Piedmont laureate?
Well, it's a unique program, actually, in the country where four different counties have worked together along with United Arts. So it's Alamance, Durham, Wake, and Orange. I always have to remember them. You know, I probably should have them tattooed on my hand, so I won't get it wrong. And it's a cooperative program with those four counties. And the Piedmont Laureate, every year they choose a different genre. So there's been a poet, a playwright, a nonfiction writer, a novelist, a children's writer, and then myself, a short fiction writer. And each year they choose a different venue. Each of the counties can ask for five different events, and then the Piedmont Laureate is asked to create a series of events. And the events that I wanted to create were workshops in historic places.
Why?
I just like the idea of getting people out of the ordinary into a new place, getting them to think about time and setting and where what characters may have been there. Already I have the Burwell School in Hillsboro will be scheduled pretty soon, the Borden House, which was part of the orphanage in Raleigh, and the Jones House in Cary, and the Glencoe Mill Village Studios.
Are you going to be riding trains as well?
Yes, I'm going to take an Amtrak train from Cary to Burlington. That'll be about a little over a one-hour trip. During that 1 hour, I'll talk about the power of fiction and sort of the arc of a short story and how it all works. Once we get to Burlington, we'll be set up in a coffee shop. They'll spend an hour writing and then back on the train and then discussing their work on the way back to Cary.
So these are writers' workshops. How do these writers find you and come to you? How are they selected?
They find me through the PiedmontLaureate.com. Website, and they're free and open to anyone in the area, and you can take one of them or all of them. There's a lot of them, so I hope a lot of people will come.
And you're a short story writer. What is, you know, I'm told, I mean, a lot of writers will tell you that short fiction is the hardest thing to write, harder than novels, and so you're going to have, you know, novice writers in many cases or writers who are aspiring to maybe get published. Is this the place to start for them?
I think it's the place where many people start because it seems like an easy thing. It's short. You know, it's not 200 pages, 300 pages. But the fun thing about teaching short fiction is that it has character development. It has an arc. It has all of the elements that you need to master to be a writer. And also, forget mastering it to be a writer, just to have fun in terms of expressing yourself. And most people, once they learn a few of the skills of writing, they enjoy reading more. In a lot of ways, I think that this should be the Piedmont Reading Laureate as well, you know, to encourage people to read and enjoy what the structure is.
Plus, you're going to help out a little bit by solving one of the riddles, the setting. At least you could, if you chose, in that historic setting, use that as, if not the setting, at least an inspiration for a kind
absolutely.
Of setting.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That gets us along. So you've written a number of your own short stories, and you actually wrote a novel that's 10 short stories tied together. Tell us about that.
Right. That's Ashwin's Rug, and it started as a short story. The last story in the book was actually the first story I wrote. And, you know, it's one of those quirky things where you buy a rug, you bring it home, you put it in your office, and you begin to dream stories. And it took me, you know, I'm almost embarrassed to say how many years it took me to write this very tiny book. But it's 10 stories and about 10 different people who own the same rug and how it changed their lives.
You brought the rug with you.
This
is Ashwin's rug, right?
This is Ashwin's rug, yes.
So tell us about it.
Well, it's a tribal rug. It's was woven in the 1880s. We know this because of the dyes that are used in it. I took it to a rug expert and spent a day with him. And I also learned that if it had all of its pieces intact, I would be a very wealthy woman, but it does not. So,
if you have access to the web right now and want to go to stateofthings.org, we're live streaming, and you can click a link there, and you can actually see the rug. So tell us about it, some of the details in this.
Well, it's interesting. These tribal rugs are very valuable because they are believed to have some magic in them, because the images, the symbols in them are symbols that were given to the young women who wove them. In the story, I created Ashwin and the weaving of the rug, and she's done a favor for her mother. She's helped her mother with something. Her mother is the shaman in the tribe. So I'll just slide over a little bit.
All right. You can show the rug and I'll show the book.
Right. So unfortunately, here's some things. There were things I just couldn't quite believe. These are camels. And as soon as the rug expert showed me these, I said, yes, of course they're camels. This is a wonderful image here, these flying Vs. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about that image is you see that image in the Inuit Indians. You see it in the Maoris. You see it in almost all indigenous peoples have this flying geese image. You see it in Appalachian quilts.
You got this in Turkey.
I got this. Well, actually, I got this in North Carolina, but it comes from Turkey. But it's almost a universal mm-hmm. image, and it's always thought to be flying birds. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's kind of fascinating that's there. These are trees, but they're upside down. There's the trunk and there's the branches of the tree. Down here we have flowers.
And I should say that so for those of you who can't right. see this, that the tree actually looks like brackets on your right. On your basketball finals card. So that's what it looks like kind of in a stand.
But we know that this is Turkmen or Turkey, in the northern regions of Turkey, because of the this is a flower garden, and Turkish rugs always have flowers symbolically in them, either very representational or more symbolic like these.
And tell us about the magic, too, about the gift of these symbols, because they are unique. And this would have been a kind of dowry rug, right?
Right. This was a dowry rug. We know it's a dowry rug. You can't see, but there's a cross in it, which is called a hachlu. And that mark indicated that it was a rug that could be used for a tent flap, a door. So it was a good omen to have that. We know from the size and also from the hachlu that it was a dowry rug, and it was a first woven rug. We also know from the back of it, because the images on the back, you see where it's been repaired, are as finely represented as they are on the front. So he's a very fine weaver who did this.
But for you as a writer, the power of this is this transference, these symbols,
right.
in this case very graphic symbols, but of course words are symbols too, and they transmit power for us, right?
Right. And words and art are a transformative thing. And, everybody has in their life an object that they can imbue power in, and they think it's magical. And the rug changes people's life, and of course, change is not always positive. So there are some hard stories in the rug where not the most positive things happen, but change is like that.
Will you read for us?
I will. I'll read a short section for you. Sita is Ashwin's mother, and she's the shaman of the tribe. And she is now at a campfire, and she is singing a dreaming song to give her daughter the images that she will always weave into her rug. Sita drew a series of wide open Vs in the sand with her fingers. These wings will carry you over your troubles. Ah, troubles cannot harm you if you are carried over them with wings so beautiful, Ashwin said, touching the fine lines her mother had drawn. Along here will be two lines of camels to carry your load. You will also weave a small mahrib, not so big as anyone would notice, but a fine, delicate design, a place for you to rest your head and pray so Allah can hear you every whispered prayer. You will not have to shout. Allah will hear you. Sita took a handful of sand and thanks for the lovely design, kissed it, and threw it on the fire as she rocked and hummed to the dancing snap of the sparks. I will give you my sign to weave and my mother's as well. Put our signs in all your rugs, and we will always be with you. And my sign? Ashwin asked, anxious to know what her mother saw in her. Your sign is like a tree. Weave the trunk strong and straight so they will be sure of the ground and the upraised arm sure of the sky. You are like the tree, slow yet steadfast. You are anchored deep to this earth, yet always reaching to the heavens. That is your strength. That is your sign. You must never forget.
Carrie Knowles, the Piedmont Laureate, reading from her book, Ashwin's Rug. It's important to you and has been not only to write but to teach.
Yes.
Has it always been?
Always
important?
Been, right. Yeah. I've always been a teacher privately or, you know, in other settings. Why not? You know, why not teach if you've got something that you love so much?
The only why not is from those who believe it's so hard to teach writing that it's some kind of creative bliss that you have to have, that can you teach it? How do you teach it?
Well, you teach the parts of it. You teach somebody. One of the things as a laureate that I have to do is to write a blog, which is not in my nature. But so I've turned the blog, anybody can go to the Piedmont Laureate website to get it, into a series of free writing lessons about characterizations, plot, development, dialogue. So if you teach people the tools, what narrative does, that, you know, that it has a form, people understand it, and they, if you have the tools with anything, you can learn to do it. And it's a craft. Writing is a craft as well as a gift for some people.
You know, we just heard Brian Stewart's wonderful story, the herpetologist here at the Museum of Natural Sciences, who is out in the field in Southeast Asia. He's collecting frogs. There's a typhoon. People make a connection. They need to have a kind of symbolic, theatrical way of reconciling this. It is real power. It is
right.
A real reconciliation. And, of course, it is quintessentially human because it is symbolic.
And it's a cultural narrative, right? They have to correct it. They have to fix it with their own sense of the narrative. One of the things I love doing is I love working with non-writers. I like to work with scientists. I like to work with mathematicians and teaching them the power of narrative, you know, how to use narrative. I work with artists to make them think about what is the story, you know, who's the main character, what's the setting. And even when scientists begin to see that there's a main character, there's a setting for their work, there's an outcome that's going to happen because of the main character, the Olengito or whatever it is, the toad, all of a sudden their work gets more focused and they get more excited about it.
Because we bring these symbols to life.
Right, exactly.
We just lost Maya Angelou yesterday,
right.
Of course.
Very sad.
And the remarkable story about her losing her voice for several years because what she spoke ended in death in fact, the man who raped her. But the power of those words scared her to no end.
And they are powerful.
Yeah.
Words are very powerful, you know. We should be more careful how we use them.
And to your point about teaching and the power of teaching, also more conscious of the power that we have. I mean, are we not conscious enough? Do we not give enough credit to the power of words and their transformative? You know, we hear so much. I mean, here we are sitting in the shadow of the Capitol, and you often hear people say, well, what do we do about it in any milieu? Oh, it's so big. Politics is so big. Economics is so big. I'm powerless. And yet,
We're not powerless. And the other thing is to understand, I just spent part of last week with the North Carolina Arts, advocating for arts in the schools. And I think if you give people a way to express themselves, whether it's through music or dance or writing or whatever it is, when you give people a way to communicate and to use symbols and to use words versus using fists or guns, you've created a very powerful thing. And also, you know, through words and through paintings and music, we have a sense that our culture matters, that our time here matters. And I think for everyone, a lot of times when I work with people, what they want to tell is the story of, I have been here, this is what I have done. And that's a powerful story. There's nothing wrong with that story. And if I can help somebody tell that story, they're a happier person. And they left a mark.
And the idea that it is subjective and local, so it's going to be different from place to place, but equally real, so that we're not dismissive of a culture that has to have a theatrical event that purges us. That's a real thing that really, really happened. And so to respect that as much as we might respect going to the movies in the U.S. of A. Would be a way of our sort of finding a common bond here. It's what humans do. We make reality.
Wouldn't it be fun if we could read each other a little better?
Yeah, and understand ourselves through each other's culture. You, to that end, you've created something called the Free Range Studio.
I have.
Tell us about it.
The Free Range Studio, a few years ago, decided that I needed to grow up and move out of my house.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah.
I never did that.
And I bought a small office building in downtown Raleigh, and it's called the Free Range Studio, and lots of things happen there. There's another writer who has an office with me there, Peggy Payne, who's a very dear friend and a good writer. And we've had other writers who have worked there in the other offices to complete works. Elaine Orr worked on her latest novel there. And we've had artists there. I have a visiting artist suite where artists can come when they're in town and to, you know, if they're doing installations with various groups and actors. And it's an exciting place where I wanted a place where lots of artistic things could happen.
So the idea of the lonely artist working in their garret without food, a recompense, is something that's...
Without food is really bad.
The food, yeah.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Even if you're alone, please
right.
eat.
Yes.
But be together and the sparks fly.
Right. Right. So we've had conferences there. We teach there. I've had we've had visiting artists there. We've had all kinds of things. And occasionally, I take a moment and draw a picture just to keep myself sane.
Carrie, what a pleasure. Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
The Piedmont Laureate, Carrie Knowles, will be leading a writing workshop at the Irregardless Cafe in Raleigh on June 2nd. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Megan Mataferi, Anita Rao, and Will Michaels. Our intern, Charlie Shelton. Our technical director, Robin Copley. Al Wodarski helping out today as well. Brent Wolf is our news director, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.